Welcome to the Hot at Hoops podcast postseason. I guess you want to call this a mid-series report against the Boston Celtics. I'm here with fellow writers Menelik and Diego. How's it going, guys?
How's it going?
Well.
Good.
Yeah? All right. Well, got a lot to talk about. Last night was the... I don't know. I wouldn't call it like a series turnaround, but some people want to call it that in the media. Me personally, I think LeBron and Wade were playing so well this, you know, winning streak, so to speak. I think they were overdue for not as good of a game. I think Wade maybe the schedule is catching up with him with his injury. What did you guys take away from this? Is it just going to be a case of the Heat are not going to beat the Celtics four times in a row? They were overdue for a bad game, or do you see it like, okay, there's some serious issues here that the Heat need to fix going forward?
I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
I think it's to add to your point. I think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think the first thing that we obviously should allude to is the desperation. You know, like you said, I mean, they're not going to win every game, and we saw also in the Western Conference Finals the Thunder played with great desperation, and the Celtics were in the same hole. You know, you can't go down 3-0. But you're right. There are some. The media is sort of honing in on what sort of a change in this series, and looks like they're speaking to the fact that after Game One, Doc Rivers made adjustments and basically trying to trap Dwayne Wade in the high pick and roll. And you know, in the Indiana series, Spoelstra made a great adjustment where he started running that high pick and roll from Dwayne, and he was splitting the pick and roll, and we saw him, you know, get to the hole easily. And so basically, there's been some indication that Doc Rivers has basically trapped Dwayne Wade and sort of limited his offense, and that's kind of messing up the Heat in terms of their half-court set. And, you know, LeBron's playing consistent as normal. He's just continuing to just be the best player. But Wade's, you know, he's not as free as he was in that last series. And, you know, Shane Battier is 0-for-7. He's not making anything. Wade's not getting to the foul line. I think him and Mario Chalmers both have 17 free throw attempts in three games. I mean, there's no way Chalmers should be getting as many free throw attempts as Dwayne Wade. And, you know, and they also adjusted to the switching by, you know, because Doc Rivers, you know, saw that Eric Spoelstra was switching off their picks and everything. And they adjusted by basically saying, all right, let's throw the ball to Kevin Garnett. You know, let's, you know, if we're going to have a cross match, let's throw it over there and make a play through Garnett. So I think Spoelstra has to make an adjustment now to figure out how to free up Dwayne Wade. And of course, if Chris Bosh comes back too, that'll be a big X factor. But assuming he doesn't, you know, they got to find a way to get Wade, I think, going offensively.
Yeah, and as far as what I think that in Game 3, the Heat came out really well. I think in these sort of games where, you know, the team at home is really desperate, they're down 0-2, you don't want to go in an 0-3 hole, you almost expect that team to come out and lead, you know, 10-0 right out of the gate. But that didn't happen in this case. I mean, I felt like the Heat came out really well. They did have some ball movement going for them. And they led, I think it was 28-22 with about 2 minutes left in the first quarter. And then from then on, really until the start of the fourth quarter when the Heat went on that really good run to actually cut the lead down to, I think it was 8, the Heat just didn't have that same ball movement. And the Celtics basically got what they wanted instead of having Garnett be that 18-foot jump shooter that he's been for the first two games of this series. And really, if you look at the second round, he basically was just taking all those jump shots. They got him the ball deep in the post, and he was able to convert. But as far as what I think, I don't think this is any – it's not need to panic. I think that you have some things that you'd like to clean up, especially with the offense and really with the defense. I think if Bosh doesn't come back, then you really have to put pressure on those players who are giving Garnett the entry passes, because we all know that he's 7 feet tall. He's the tallest player on the court, and he's probably going to get that entry pass if you get it to him. But the Heat should do a better job of trying to pressure the entry passer. I think, you know, you can look at a lot of similarities between this series and last series when Roy Hibbert was the tallest player on the court and the Heat were able to you know, try to get him, I guess, make it tougher for him to make those deep passes. I think Hibbert still did pretty much have his way against the Heat bigs, but the Heat were still able to win that series, even with him playing pretty well. I mean, I don't think that it's cause for concern, but I do agree that the Heat do have to find a way to get Wade a little bit more room. I think it's something. I mean, he in all three of these games, he hasn't really had a good first half in any one of these games, and I think you have to wonder, well, what's happening there?
Yeah, sorry. What do you think about that? Because I know, do you know what the status of Chris Bosh is and for Game 4 or the rest of the series?
No, they don't say anything about that. I haven't gotten any information as far as that goes, and I would assume that even if he was ready to come back, they wouldn't say it anyway.
Right.
And I mean, that's a huge component of the Heat. I mean, that's the third best player, and not just the third best player on a normal team. That's an all-star that would be the best player on a lot of teams like the Raptors. So that's something that you can't discount. And Andy's somebody that would be a perfect counterpart to Kevin Garnett. That would at least cancel out his production. And it would be another person in the paint to front him or to try to stop those entry points, because that was a key yesterday. I think Paul Pierce had a good game too, but Kevin Garnett was just, well, that's what stopped that run at the end of the game. They put him back in the game, and he also grabbed an offensive rebound that killed the Heat. What also killed the Heat were missed free throws. I do not understand what's going on with that. Wade has been pretty bad with that, and LeBron too. And even Mike Miller missed that technical foul after Garnett
Chalmers
accidentally threw his elbow. Garnett mistakenly threw his elbow, that was a technical foul. Yeah, everybody. Chalmers,
I mean,
too.
This series, Wade actually, and it's funny because Wade was abysmal in the last series. He's 13 for 17 in this series, but what's so shocking is Chalmers 9 for 17, LeBron 25 for 38. I don't know what's going on with their free throw shooting.
I can't explain it. I mean, when the media is let into practice, you see them practicing their free throws.
Right,
it's not like
right.
They're not doing it.
It's mental.
It is. It has to be.
What do you guys think about this? And, you know, in the fourth quarter, the Heat made a good comeback. I think they outscored the Celtics 28-16 or something. And they were able to cut that deficit down to, I think, as close as 8, right? And, you know, I'm wondering, did Spoelstra figure something out in a sense where maybe they should play – again, assuming Chris Bosh is not coming back, I think that's the best way you have to assume it. You can't, you know, bank on Chris Bosh returning. If they have to play the Celtics again, I mean, is it possible LeBron could play some center like he did in that fourth quarter, because then really allowing, you know, just basically have – optimum spacing. You got LeBron matching up with Kevin Garnett, which I think he can handle. I mean, Garnett's not that big and pound for pound. And, you know, I guess that would mean you put basically 4 shooters on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you're talking about 4 three-point shooters on the – well, I'd say 3 because Wade's not really a three-point shooter. But, you know, 3 shooters on the court with LeBron and Wade, that could really open up the court. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think it could work. Maybe in small doses, but I think you obviously have to have a little bit of concern for the glass in that situation. I think, you know, LeBron James is, I think, just as tall as Haslam, and he's actually more heavy than him. And the Heat did go to some lineups with him playing the 4. And, you know, this is one of those series where there isn't really a true center on either team. Garnett is the closest thing. But I do think that, you know, the one thing I would say is, instead of maybe having Battier in there, maybe put James Jones in there, because as you mentioned, Battier was, I think, 0 for 6 in Game 2. I think he did hit a big 3 in Game 2 that tied the game. In the fourth quarter.
Huge.
But I think, you know, if you're just looking at the season in totality, Batty has really struggled with his shot. James Jones, one of the best 3-point shooters in the league,
maybe he struggled with his shot too. He hasn't been that reliable from the three-pointer.
Yeah, but he hasn't had as many opportunities as Battier has either. I mean, Battier has been playing like 40 plus minutes recently.
But he gives more on defense than Jones.
Yeah, I think Shane gives you just, you know, he brings way more to the table. I hear what you're saying, Diego, that
– Yeah.
I agree with you that James Jones, I think, should see a reasonable increase in his minutes to help space the floor. But to Suri's point, Shane really does bring, just veteran leadership. He plays defense, one of the best charge takers in the league. You can really count – I mean, that guy was playing – he's playing D on David West. You know, he can bang down there with Bass. He's pretty important to their team defensively. But I agree that Jones should get some more minutes. I don't know how much more you can play him, though, because you don't – I mean, Miller's playing well, too. And it's funny because I don't even know – I see Mike Miller hit a three-point shot, then grimace every 5 seconds.
Yeah, he permanently looks like he needs to go to the bathroom, like really bad.
Yeah. It looks like he's – and I don't want to jinx him, but it looks like he's just one, awkward fall away from really hurting himself. So I don't know. I mean, but I guess he's on the court. But, when you talk about Bosch, I mean, I'm just having a hard time thinking if he wasn't going to play, why did he travel with the team? I mean, you typically injured players don't travel with their teams on the road. So I don't know. I think maybe you can see him, maybe in game four, maybe in game five, because I just don't know why you would have him travel with the team if he wasn't going to play, because I mean, he didn't travel with the team for those two games in Indiana or for game six, because the Heat had all of their, treatment down there in Miami. So I just don't know. I think, you've heard of him, starting to work out recently. I think, I don't know what to say, but if Bosch is going to be back, and I don't know if he is, but like I said, if he's going to travel with the team, I don't know why he wouldn't play. But just by being on the court, he helps Wade out, because you've seen a lot of double teaming of Wade off of that pick and roll. And I think that's because whether it's Joel Anthony, Ronnie Turiaf, or even UD, who does have that jump shot, and he has hit a couple of jump shots in this series, they aren't going to honor Bosch. I mean, they are going to honor Bosch for that jump shot, unlike, those other three guys. So I think if Bosch does come back, and I don't know if he is, but if he does, he's going to help Wade and James with those pick and rolls, because they're going to have to honor his jump shot. And, if you look at it, if the ball makes it to him and he's being guarded by KG, and Bosch has that little pump fake to get him in the air and then drive to the basket, there isn't really any other, guy to protect the rim in that situation. So I think even if Bosch isn't really 100%, I think he can really help you in a lot of ways. And I think, you've even seen, in the first half of game two and in, the second and third quarters of game three, how he could have really used another outlet guy on offense.
I mean, that stretch where the Heat didn't score one field goal for about 8 minutes was brutal. But that's the thing. I mean, there was times where those rotations of Spoelstra, they didn't really convince me a whole lot. You didn't really know where the offense was coming from. And you've seen it, too. For some reason lately, if LeBron isn't on the floor but Wade is, the offense is completely out of whack. And I guess that adds to Wade's subpar game. He really wasn't able to attack or really get his teammates involved. So you just got into the opposite of what they were playing in the beginning of the game, where there was a lot of ball movement until they found the right guy. Even Shane, he had a couple of moves where he got Bass in foul trouble from the corner three, just penetrating, and then maybe at the last second he dished it off to LeBron in one possession. It was a layup. Those kind of positions like ceased to exist in the second quarter, and that's where that hole started to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And of course, somebody like Bosch, I mean, it's such a crucial part of the offense. And even in this case with Garnett, just somebody that can kind of match up with him, because I see Garnett as being the only consistent threat from the Celtics. If you somewhat contain him, then the pressure goes to Pierce. The pressure goes to Ray Allen to make his threes.
Rondo.
And Rondo, I mean, that was kind of a fluke. I mean, we saw it in the last game. He wasn't really even looking for a shot anymore. But he's been playing great. He was the one that was facilitating. You need to see that from Chalmers or Wade, because just like that, just them dribbling and getting the shot clock down to 8 or 7, the Heat aren't going to score. The Celtics aren't just going to give them easy baskets like the Pacers were kind of doing with Wade when he kind of had his way those last couple of games. And he was able to do anything he wanted.
And again, that goes back to, you know, the high pick and roll. And that's when this series turned around. It turned around when Spoelstra started allowing Wade to get back to, you know, putting him in a place that he was very comfortable, which is that high pick and roll where he gathers, he has a, you know, a steamroll of energy, mm-hmm. and just come right at you and make a decision. But the Celtics aren't giving Wade that. So they're going to have to find another way. That's key for this series. If mm-hmm. they can't figure out a way to, you know, to get Wade going, they're going to be in some trouble, because LeBron can't score 60 points. It's just not, you know? And if Bosch doesn't come back, where are they going to get offense from? I think that's a legitimate concern.
Now, what did the Celtics do to stop that Heat, the fast pace that was so effective in the beginning of the game, where they were running out even after made baskets? What did you guys think that the Doc Rivers did to kind of stop that? Because the Heat kind of went away from it, but, you know, just from their athleticism, it's kind of hard to believe that they would just discard that, because it was working so well in the beginning of the game. And that's kind of what turned the Pacers series around, just playing faster instead of just in the half court.
Well, you got to get stops. Yeah. I think simplistically, you have to get stops. I mean, running out on a made basket, it's possible, but it's very unlikely. You know, and you look at the Heat's roster, outside of Wade and LeBron, they're not that great in transition. It's really just those two. I mean, Battier.
Chalmers is good.
Yeah, but he's not like, you know, would you put Chalmers in a, you know, first-class organization of transition players? You know, I mean, it's not like they're the Thunder where they can have multiple guys that can just sprint down the lane, you know? They just have two of the best finishers, Wade and LeBron. So, mm-hmm. yes, they can do it, but they, number one, I think they have to get stops. And number two, they probably need to go with a faster lineup. If they're playing Udonis Haslam, you know, Shane Battier. If Shane Battier, Mike Miller, and Udonis Haslam are in the game, that's 60% of their starting five is not quick. So, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? It's kind of hard to run unless it's Wade quarterbacking to LeBron or vice versa. So I think that's, you know, and with Doc Rivers telling them to get back, you know, it's going to be hard unless they get stops and steals and blocks and deflections and so forth.
That's another place where Bosch is sorely missing, because he was effective during the regular season as that guy that's trailing the break, the fast break, and he would get those kind of points in the paint. He just a little bit behind the other two, and he was either open for
a three,
or just a, you know, pop up mid range jumper. I mean, he's good at those too, just from the elbow. Well, going forward now, what did he do? I mean, I think, just like any team wants to do when they go on the road in a playoff series, they're looking for a split. So it didn't happen this first game. If they can get that, and then they can theoretically close it out at home. So I think that's – obviously every game is a must win. But you really don't want to go into a 2-2 series. A 3-1 and a 2-2, it's completely different.
Yeah.
So what are the keys to the game on a Sunday night?
Well, I think that, number one, you have to find a way to make Garnett back into an 18-foot jump shooter instead of a guy who's going to just get the ball deep in the paint and basically live on easy buckets. If Bosch doesn't come back, as I said, you have to pressure the people who are making those entry passes if he's getting fronted. So that's number one. I think number two, you have to find a way, as I said, to get Wade a little bit more involved, especially in the first half. I mean, and as I said, we don't know about Bosch, and that will be a significant part of the answer to that. But I think, you know, sometimes I even think that maybe Wade is just better off not even getting the pick and just going on in isolation, because I think if he's going up against a hobbled Ray Allen who has bone spurs, I think he'll be able to get a step on him, and then, you know, even if Garnett does come over, he'll be coming over a little bit later, and he'll already have, as was said earlier, ahead of steam going to the basket. Maybe he'll find an open shooter. Maybe he'll find a good player underneath the basket for a dunk. So I think those are two areas that I would say right off the bat are areas that you need to fix. And, you know, I think when you look at game three, there was a lot that the Heat just, I just felt like they sort of maybe took their foot off the gas pedal a little bit. They sort of went on cruise control, just like what people said about the Spurs in game three. I mean, they started off the game so well, and then they just sort of went away from that great crisp ball movement. So I think you can maybe spin this into a positive and say, what were the mistakes that you made in game three were definitely things that you can, you know, clean up and touch up for game four. And that's, as you said, is a big game, because there is a huge difference between going up 3-1 to your home court or coming back 2-2 with a huge game five.
Yeah, I think they definitely have a chance of winning the next game, and if they win that next game, they definitely will seize control of the series. But I think the two fundamental keys, number one, they got to control the glass, you know, like, mm-hmm. And they were out-rebounded, I think they were minus 11 or minus 12. They have to, you know, try to get some second chance points, rebound, control the glass. And number two, they have to find a way to get Wade going. And I don't think that isolation is really the best adjustment, just because the only problem with isolation is that you get stagnant and, you know, you're going to have guys standing around watching. And I just, yes, Wade could be effective and should be effective against Ray Allen, but considering the way Spoelstra plays him, he might not be in the game all the time when Allen's there. You know, he likes to bench Wade early in the first, sort of, and then come back and play the start of the second. And, you know, if he's being guarded by Petrus or even Dueling, I would rather have Wade. I think Spo should try to get Wade on the block. I think this series, to me, is an easier series to put Wade back on the post, because there really aren't that many big guys on the Celtics, you know? So, you know, in the Pacers series, they went away from that because they were just too big. You know, I mean, they were just, I mean, David West, Paul George, Danny Granger, Roy Hibbert, then off the bench, Adminson, and those guys. And they were really large. So it was not a good series for Wade to be down there. He's better off slashing. So they made a good adjustment. But I think in this series, Celtics are pretty depleted in the front court. So I would think that if they're going to trap him in the high pick and roll, why not try to put him on the block? And then at least that way, it's similar to what you're saying for an isolation, because he'll have it in the block, but at least from the post, he can still generate offense. You know, if he gets double from there, you know, you can, that way, you know, you can pass it out to the shooters, and you got some side movement, some off ball movement. And I think maybe that could be a better way to get Wade going, because they're not going to allow him to just split the pick and roll anymore and just come off screens like he was doing. So I would maybe try that. And also, lastly, one final point is I think they need to, like you said earlier, you know, incorporate their shooters a little more. You know, maybe if that means play James Jones more, maybe, or if that just means play a small lineup for four or five minutes more, just to have some more spacing to try to help, you know, throw a curveball at Doc Rivers, who, because they, you know, he seems like he knows how to defend Miami, and they have to switch it up now.
I think you make an excellent point, because with Wade. Because, I mean, he was destroying a player like Barbosa. So there's no reason why he couldn't do that against Dueling, for example.
Right.
Or even Marquis Daniel, who played a decent game. But, I mean, they can't guard Wade like that. As far as though, we were also talking about, Diego made a good point as well. What about the fourth quarter rotation? Should LeBron and Wade be resting at all? Because you see somebody like, obviously Rondo is a younger player, but, I mean, playing huge minutes, can Spoelstra afford to rest these two with Bosch gone? I mean, what do you guys think about those rotations late in the game?
Yeah, you know, I thought that maybe Spo was just going to take a page out of Greg Popovich's book and just basically sit Wade and James for the entire fourth quarter. I was surprised to see both of them still in the game. And they pretty much played, I think, pretty much the whole second half, except for those last couple minutes at the end. You know, I felt like what Spo was thinking, and I'm not sure because he didn't say it in the press conference, but I thought that he was saying, let me try this new lineup and see how it goes. And that he cut the lead to 11 with 7 minutes left on a wide open Mike Miller three. And I think when you're down 11 on the road with 7 minutes left, you still have a very uphill battle. But I think the fact that they got it down from, I think it was 22 or 24, down to 11 with 7 minutes left, which is a lot of time. But like I said, when you're on the road, it is an uphill battle. I was okay with going with it just because for the first 5 minutes of the quarter, they were able to really cut into the lead. And I think that Doc Rivers really did put Garnett on the bench for far too long in that fourth quarter. And then when he put him back in, I think that sort of stemmed the tide because the Heat really didn't get a whole lot closer after those two Mike Miller threes. I think if the Celtics had pretty much kept their lead and with 7 minutes to go instead of 11, it was still 22, I think the Heat just take him out at that point. But, you know, as far as trying something new for a couple minutes, see how it goes. And then if you get close, you know, go all in. I don't have a problem with that. So that's basically how I feel.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, they got up. I mean, unfortunately, Spo was in a tight spot. And I think Jeff Van Gundy alluded, well, actually, no, Jeff Van Gundy was talking about Doc Rivers before the game, saying that he's in a tight spot with, do you rest? How do you manage your players? You know, it's a must win. And I think that's the same exact scenario for the Heat now in terms of, you know, Wade and LeBron, how they're going to manage their minutes. I think you can't. I just think that right now you just have to play them as much as they can possibly handle it. You know, it's just do or die at this point. You work towards this time of the year. LeBron is the most conditioned athlete possibly we've ever seen. I think he can handle it. Dwayne Wade isn't as conditioned or isn't as physically gifted, but you got to play them. I mean, you know, you have to play those guys, even if they're not, you know, handling the ball or shooting, at least their presence is going to make it easier for the role players. If you look at the minutes log, Chalmers has actually played more minutes in this series than Dwayne Wade, which is surprising. Wade's got to go out there. He's got to play more minutes. But he is logging heavy. I mean, last game, I think they both played about 43 or 44 minutes. So, I mean, they're out there. I just think you can't afford to rest them in this series because, you know, they're limited. Unless Chris Bosh comes back, they're going to have to play Wade and LeBron. And this is what they, you know, this is what they pay the big bucks for. You know, you got to go out there and you just have to exert yourself and will your team to a victory. I think they can do it. They're physically gifted enough that they can pull it off and they could be effective, you know, playing heavy minutes. And I think they will.
Okay. I have this one comment that was in the game recap. His name is Whodunit. But he makes an interesting point, and I didn't catch it during the game. But you know, the more I read it, the more I think about it. I don't know what his major beef was with Spoelstra as to why did he call a timeout in the second quarter when the Heat were up 28-23, and he said that at that point that kind of just killed his own team's momentum, and that's the part where the Celtics came back. I think they went on a 9-0 run. And he says you never, never, never call a timeout when your team has the momentum. What do you guys think about that? Like, do you think that was just something that is just a fluke, that it just happened to be like that? Or is it just like, you know, what's Spoelstra thinking with these timeouts? And to a larger point, this is kind of like the first series where I think that – I think he outcoached Vogel, clearly he did. But,
right. But
you know, this is Doc Rivers we're talking about, you know, like – was that something that really had an effect on the game, or what do you guys think about that point that this guy made?
Well, I think actually it was 28-22, and then the Celtics made a three-pointer, and then he called the timeout when it was 28-25. I think sometimes you will see a coach call a timeout after just one defensive breakdown when a team gets a wide-open three-pointer, which I think is what happened.
Yeah.
But
Eric loves to call timeouts when the other team has scored two baskets in a row. I don't know if you guys ever. It's automatic. He will call a timeout after just two baskets in a row. But go ahead, Diego. Sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, I think at that point, I mean, I don't know if it was really stopping the momentum. I think what you saw right after that timeout was LeBron James took a couple of ill-advised jump shots. I think on one play, he actually got the ball stripped by Keon dueling, and he just basically went into the lane for a nice fast break layup. But I wouldn't say that calling the timeout led to that offensive drought or the big run that the Celtics have to really build that lead that the Heat finally just couldn't get out of, even with that nice rally in the fourth quarter. But I mean, I just think that he called it because his team had a defensive breakdown and they got a wide open three-pointer.
So just to be clear, this happened in the last – this is the last game he was complaining about?
Yeah.
Last night.
Okay. I didn't even catch it. So he called a timeout in the – is this in the first quarter, you said?
Yeah.
It was or was it early in the – yeah, I think it was the first quarter.
Yeah.
28-23, I think it was the first quarter.
Okay, and so like, okay, I see what you said. Okay, well, like you said, sir, he calls timeouts pretty frantically. I think it's good to call timeouts. I mean, okay, I guess devil's advocate would allude to Phil Jackson, right? Remember, he would never call a timeout. That guy would. I mean, his team could go down 30 points. Yeah, that's all right. You guys got it. You guys bounce back. You know. Mm-hmm. So that's the extreme opposite. And I guess a guy like Greg Popovich is, I think he micromanages pretty well. He calls timeouts when needed. Spo, I think, is in between there. I think he calls timeouts sometimes at a good moment where, you know, there's a run or in that particular moment. That is a good point. I mean, you never want to cut your own team's momentum. I think he's just very worried. I think Spoelstra, and he's been on the hot seat for a while because he's coaching the most glamorous, you know, media frenzy. Yeah, like the rock stars of the league, of probably almost all of sports. So he's on a hot seat. He's going to be always evaluated and judged. So to his defense, it's kind of hard to keep your composure probably, you know, when you just have to try to worry and manage your team. I just think he's a little worried, and I just think that he wants to make sure his team is poised. And but I do think it's a solid point. You never want to. You know, I thought, what'd you guys think? I'm kind of, this is somewhat related, but what did you guys think of the way, how you think LeBron and Wade are handling Spoelstra as a coach and handling him all on and off the court and talking about him? I thought it was very commendable how LeBron pretty much validated Spoelstra in the last series. He just said that he coached his butt off. And I thought that was very good on LeBron's part. Very, you know, nice of him, you know, to tell that to the media.
Well, yeah, somebody has to balance that out because I mean, it happens with every coach, but especially with a coach like Spoelstra, that he'll get so much blame when they lose, as well as maybe LeBron and Wade in addition to that. But when they win, nobody really talks about Spoelstra. They talk about, you know, what the players did. So I get that. But at the same time, yeah, I think Spoelstra in and of itself, like the team isn't winning in spite of him. I think he's done a really good job of kind of, you know, adjusting to such a huge part of missing Bosch. I mean, you have to throw a lot of plays out from his playbook, just from that standpoint. I still would like to see a little bit better late game management.
Right.
And that's just something that pretty much everybody is kind of zoned in on. But of course, it's such a big deal when the Heat rarely just annihilate the teams like the Spurs do. So when you're getting down to those final few minutes, everybody's going to look at every single possession, criticize the coach. And I understand that, but at the same time, the coach isn't the one that's shooting three-pointers or making decisions right on the fly. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of 50-50. I think Spoelstra has done a great job. And I mean, look at where the team is now. And I think they've weathered that storm. Of course, all of that changes after every Heat loss. Unlike the Spurs, you know, they got blown out, and they didn't even, well, like Diego says, the starters didn't even play the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think he's done a good job overall. But I think when there is criticism, if it's fair, I mean, it's fair. I mean, that's nothing else you can do about it. I mean, they're just one of those teams that are just going to be in the spotlight constantly. And that's what everybody signed up for. So,
yeah, I mean, and like you guys said, I mean, this is Doc Rivers. It's not Frank Vogel. So it's a much tougher coaching assignment.
And we've talked about it before with Diego with podcasts too. I mean, that's what happened in the finals last year.
Oh, yeah.
Carlisle completely outcoached Spo. I was talking about it in 2006 that Riley completely outcoached Avery Johnson. So these are things that definitely matter.
I agree with you. And I mean, going back to that series, I mean, it was just brilliant what Carlisle did, pulling JJ Barea into the starting lineup. I think it was after game two. I mean, that was just brilliant. And, you know, that changed the whole series after that.
Definitely.
And I will say, just to add to your point, I think that I know Brian Weinhorst, you know, from ESPN, he basically wrote a column saying, hey, Spoelstra, you better step up. He pretty much called out Spoelstra. So, fair or unfair, I think I probably lean on maybe a tad unfair, but he, you know, basically said Doc made his adjustments and now it's on Spoelstra because, you know, now we'll see what you do basically for game four.
Yeah. And that, but that goes with any seven game series. I mean, that's how it is. It's a kind of a chess match and we'll see what Spoelstra comes up with in the next game and we'll see how Doc adjusts to that. But I think just overall, I mean, you look at both teams, even with Bosch out, the Heat should close out this series at least in six games. I mean, you have to assume that the Celtics can't beat the Heat three out of the next four games, and two of those are in Miami. Mm-hmm. So, I still think I don't know what would have to happen for something like that to occur, that the Heat would lose three out of the next four games. And I don't even know if it's that bad for the Heat to have this series go on a little bit longer so you can incorporate Bosch, because do you really want to put Bosch in out of nowhere against the Spurs? I don't know if you want to do that either.
I think what you balance in this situation of, you know, do you, you know, want to get Bosch having a few games under his belt before he plays in the finals? I mean, I think you weigh that with, okay, well, would you want the entire team, the entire rest of the team to get some, you know, rest, right?
No, I'm not saying that the Heat should purposely lose games.
But. I mean, it's just that I think when you look at, I mean, we mentioned how, you know, I guess you want to call it the big two have been playing huge minutes. I mean, Battier and Chalmers have been playing 40-plus minutes as well. I think that you just want to get this done as quickly as possible. Like I said, maybe Bosch comes back for game four. Maybe he comes back for game five. I think it was Brian Windhorst who tweeted out that he thinks he'll be back for game five. But, you know, when he's ready to come back, he'll be ready. And you just want to – I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing. I think that you really just want to get as much rest as possible because, as we mentioned, I think you really can't afford to sit either Wade or James a whole lot during the actual game. So you hope that something like what happened in the last series happened, where you get done with Indiana in six, and then the other series goes to seven. You have pretty much 3 or 4 days, I think it was, to just rest and prepare for the next series.
Yeah, I agree. And going back to, you know, you make up a good point too about, like, you know, the more games that they play, you know, you're allowing Bosch more recovery time, right? So that's great. I mean, Bosch, I think, will return at some point, you know, just because it looks like he's gearing up. You know, it's been
more than half a month.
Has it been that long?
I think it was the 14th that he went down, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he should be, you know, nearing the corner. I think that, you know, one thing I will speak about also, you can tell LeBron has a lot of respect for Rajon Rondo. And I really noticed that. The way that he talks about him and the way that he praises him and even saw how fast he wanted to help him up, you know, when he fell. He really likes his game. I think he likes it because, you know, he likes guys that have that all-around game like himself, you know, rebound, assist, steal, block, and so forth. And I just think they got to cut the head of the snake off. Rondo is running around. I'm not sure how do you guys feel about the classification? I don't think I'm not buying it from Spoelstra, and they say that he's unpredictable. I don't think that's you know, you have to figure it out, you know, like you keep saying Rondo's, you know, we don't know what we're going to get from him. And so it's hard to prepare. But, well, I don't really know. You know what he's going to do. You know what he likes to do. You see his habits. You watch tape, you know, try to take something away, because we can't just keep calling him unpredictable and let him run around and, you know, because he's the head of the snake, you know. And so I just feel like they got to find a way to at least, you know, do something to bother Rondo. You know, I know Diego, we were joking about how I was obviously wrong about laughing at Brooks or putting Cephalosha on Parker, but
yeah,
you know, maybe put LeBron on Rondo for a little while, you know, or maybe put Shane. I don't know. You know, I just feel like they got to do something. You know, Kenny Smith from TNT always made a good point. I don't understand why teams back off of Rajon Rondo.
I don't get it either. You know, way too much space. He's not the fastest guard. It's not like it's Derrick Rose anyway. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know why they give him so much space. I even asked Rondo about it last season during the playoffs. And, I mean, he was happy with it. He's like, fine. I mean, I bring it on. I mean, I think that's a great strategy because, for me, it gives me all the space I need.
Yeah.
And that's all he said because he doesn't give me money.
Right,
doesn't
right.
give you much of an answer. But that's what he said. I mean, he was totally fine with it.
Well, he'll tell you to take that camera off. I saw that one funny clip where he was like, hey, man, how many times I tell you to take that camera off? I saw it on TNT.
Nah, I know just to give him one question, that's it. I'm not going to go into a discussion with him because he's not going to give me a conversation. he's just the kind of player he is.
It seems like he's mad whenever I see him, you know, with all of those people asking him questions. It just seems like he's mad.
But that's how he is always. Have you ever seen him smile? Have you ever seen him make any type of expression of emotion? And I think that's fine. I don't think there's a problem with that. But he's just – that's not even the kind of player he is. It's just the kind of person he is, at least – At the arenas, I've never in the locker rooms. It's just that's just the way he is. He's not socializing with his teammates.
I think that's why he was so devastated when Perkins got traded. You know, his one counterpart left.
Yeah, I mean, if you could last year in the locker room, if you could have one complete opposite of him, it would be Perkins. No, not Perkins. I'm sorry, Baby Davis.
Oh yeah,
that guy. He was always. Talking loudly, jumping around in the locker room, and Rondo, you just see him just doing his own thing, and that's a lot of players. And Kirilenko, he reads books and he's just chilling in his one little corner, and that's it. That's all he's doing. He's not going to be talking with his teammates.
Tayshaun Prince, he's like that too. He's very quiet.
Yeah, there's a lot of players that are like that. That's fine, but Rondo, I just never ever seen him break that character. And that's just the way he is. So I wouldn't say like, oh, he's purposely like this in front of reporters. It's just that's the only time you're really seeing him in the locker room being, you know, surly.
But again, though, like we were saying, I just don't get that defensive strategy, you know. A guy that can, you know, is killing you for 44 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists or whatever it was. Now he's still the head of the snake. What, he had two double-doubles in two other games? I mean,
yeah. Whatever they're doing, it's not working.
You can't let that guy run around like that. You have to, I say, put someone on him. You know the way Kayon Dueling is pressuring Wade, like, you know, playing defense?
Yeah.
You got to have somebody come in there and do that to him, you know? At least take 4 or 5 seconds off the shot clock, you know, as pesky defense. He may blow by him, but, you know, we just can't let the guy just have a open space, free terrain and just roam and run the offense.
Well, we see the Celtics doing that with Wade, trying to get the ball out of his hands and trapping him. Should they do that to Rondo?
With Wade?
Yeah, you saw the Celtics trying to do that sometimes, just try to get the ball out of his hands. Do you think the Heat should do that with Rondo, just get it out of his hands?
Yeah, but not with Wade, though. Oh, you're saying
no, like, no. I'm saying on the other end of the floor. That's what they were doing to Wade.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, good point. I think so.
Yeah, I mean,
make somebody else beat you. You know, I'd rather have Ray Allen try to make a pass than Rondo.
Diego, yeah, what were you going to say? I know I cut you off. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think at one point in the game, I think Jeff Van Gundy said, you know, at one play that the Heat did sort of trap him, but it wasn't really a hard trap. And I think Rondo just made an easy pass to Garnett, and he made an easy layup. I think that if you really want to trap him, just really try to get in his space, really give him no room to operate, and maybe then you can really, you know, force some turnovers and really get out on the break. But I think, you know, I'd rather have, you know, Brandon Bass try to beat me, who has, you know, not played all that well, than, you know, Rondo or, you know, other players.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that's it. Let's see what happens tomorrow night, Sunday night. And that's a huge game. But thank you guys for being on with me, and see what happens tomorrow.
Thanks. Right. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, guys.
Bye.
da-da-da-da.